Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
Joining me tonight to discuss the infamous Zodiac Killer is Mike Morford. So please introduce yourself and tell us about your site.
All right. I'm Mike Morford. I run ZodiacKillerSite.com. The site's been around for a couple years. I had another Zodiac site before that, same name, different extension. You know, we researched the case of the Zodiac Killer, you know, suspects, clues, evidence, victims, just in an effort to try and see the case solved and see justice done for the victims of the murders.
What actually got you into this case? Because you obviously have a passion for it. So what got you started on it?
I've always been a big fan of, you know, mysteries. You know, when I was a kid, Bigfoot or Bermuda Triangle or UFOs or whatever it was. But I actually did a book report in high school about the Zodiac. I don't know how I got the book, but I got a copy of Robert Graysmith's Zodiac book, and I read it a little bit, and I did a report on it, and I can actually still see in my mind the teacher grading it, and she wasn't too happy with what I had picked out, you know, for subject matter. But, you know, as a teenage kid, I was weird, I guess, so that's what I picked. And then later on, I got, you know, with the internet and stuff, I would read more stuff about unsolved crimes online and stuff. And the Zodiac one was one that came back to me that I was still interested in. So I've been posting on the internet for probably 10 years about it, and had the sites that I have for the last, you know, 4 or 5 years at least. So that's how I got into it.
Very good. Now, I know this is a very popular case. It's in America, it's like saying Jack the Ripper. Most people know this is – there are unsolved crimes. There's a serial killer with the name Zodiac attached to it. Can you please give us an overview of this case for people who are new to it, or as a refresher for people who have heard of it but haven't looked into it in a while?
Yeah, the Zodiac case was in California, and it started back in – December of 1968 in the town of Vallejo, and that's outside of San Francisco. A young couple, David Faraday and Betty Lou Jensen, were on a date, and they were parked in a Lover's Lane area a little bit after 11 p.m., and it was, you know, a Lover's Lane area. It was a secluded, dark area, a good place for a couple young kids to park and, you know, do whatever young kids do in that kind of setting. But you know, somebody came along, and before they had a chance to defend themselves, they were murdered. They were shot. the person got them out of the car and shot Dave in the back of his head. And Betty Lou, you know, terrified, took off running. She was shot several times in the back. And this was December of 1968. And, you know, it was a small town, and they were pretty shocked by it, but not much happened with it. And then in July of 1969, there was another attack, very similar, right down the road within a couple miles. This one was at Blue Rock Springs in Vallejo, near a golf course. And that was the attack of Darlene Farron and Mike Mageau. They were parked in a similar situation when somebody came up to them and shined a light, blinding them in their car, and just shot several times, shot them both, and, you know, left and actually went back to his car and then came back and shot them some more. So it was pretty ruthless. And, you know, he survived, but Darlene Farron didn't. So he was able later on to give a little bit of an account, but, you know, not the best description since he had a light shining in his eyes while he was getting shot. A few weeks later, what happened was a letter came to the local papers. And the letter was basically from somebody saying that he had killed, you know, attacked Darlene Farron on July 4th and the first couple in December of 68. And he took credit for it, and he actually included a cipher. And he taunted the police and said, look, in this cipher, if you can solve the cipher, my identity's in there. So this was something that wasn't heard of, somebody writing a letter claiming responsibility and taunting police by saying, hey, if you solve this, you'll know who I am. So this made headlines right there in the Bay Area. And the cipher eventually was solved. A couple named the Hardens solved the cipher, but it didn't reveal the killer's name. It was just basically a taunt, but there was no name in there. So while this was making news, in September, late September, a young couple in Napa, which is adjacent to Vallejo, this couple was attacked while they were out picnicking at Lake Berryessa. And they were attacked by a guy that came up with a hood, like an executioner's hood, with a cross circle on the chest. And they actually were approached by a guy with a gun, and he warned them that he wanted to rob their car, and he was an escaped convict, and a number of different things just to get them to comply with what he wanted. And he forced the female, Cecilia Shepherd, he forced her to tie up the male victim, Brian Hartnell. And then, you know, he in turn tied Cecilia up as well. And once they were, you know, tied up and secured, he actually put the gun away and pulled out a knife, and he began stabbing both of them, and he stabbed them repeatedly. And, you know, Cecilia wound up dying. Brian Hartnell luckily survived, and they later got help. But something he did when he walked away from the crime scene, he walked up to the road where the cars were parked, and he actually wrote a message on Hartnell's door, and it essentially took credit for the crime. And then he also alluded to the fact that he had been responsible for the other attacks. So this was another thing linking, you know, Vallejo to Napa. They knew that the same person that had done those attacks, you know, had done this new one. And then he sort of, you know, had targeted young, you know, couples, essentially. Mostly, you know, the first two were at night. This couple was in broad daylight. You know, still a secluded area, but it was daylight, and he had stabbed them, not shot them, like the first two couples. So this was a little bit different. But his next crime in October was completely different, because he went to San Francisco, and he actually picked, you know, hailed a cab, and he had the cabbie, Paul Stein, drive to a location, and that was near Washington and Cherry, and he actually shot Paul Stein in the back of the head. So he deviated greatly with the type of, you know, victim and his whole approach to how he attacked him. But this was the biggest break in the case, because as he exited the cabbie's, you know, cab, he walked around the other side. He was witnessed by several teenage kids at a house across the street from the crime scene. And they gave a good description. They actually didn't see him shoot Paul Stein, but they thought he was robbing him. So they called the police pretty quickly, and the police actually got there pretty fast. But he had left on foot, and the police, you know, scoured the streets nearby. Somehow the broadcast had gone out that they were looking for a black male. In reality, he was white, stocky, heavy set, thick glasses. Well, the police, when they're looking for this black male, happened to drive by a guy that matched what the Zodiac really looked like as he was going down the road. They didn't pay too much attention to him because they thought they were looking for a black male. And as they got down the street a ways, they corrected the description over the air of what they were looking for, and the cops realized they had just passed that guy. So, of course, they went back, and he's gone now. Well, you know, lo and behold, he sends another letter after that, and this one is so brazen, he includes Paul Stein's shirt, part of his bloody shirt, in the letter, and he claims that he was watching the police as they bumbled around looking for him and stuff like that. In reality, he probably left the area pretty quickly and got out of there. But this slowed down his activity, and as a matter of fact, it's the last confirmed Zodiac murder, because after this, they put a very good sketch out based on the kids witnessing him and based on Officer Falk, who's the one that gave a good description of what he looked like up close. And after that sketch and after that murder, the Zodiac never was confirmed to have murdered anybody after that. But he did get into a whole nother phase, which was his letter writing campaign. And this is where he began to send letters repeatedly to the San Francisco Chronicle. And they were different taunting letters about different things that he was interested in. He wanted the police, he wanted the newspapers to print the letter. So he got off on seeing his letters printed, and then it wasn't about murders anymore. Now he was actually taunting the police, and that's the bulk of his activity. He went till 1971 writing letters pretty, you know, on a regular basis to the newspapers and police. And then there was an absence, you know, from 1971 to 1974, he didn't write a letter. And then he started writing letters again in 1974, and they stopped in 1974. They were all confirmed by writing experts to be all from him. So there's always been a little bit of a mystery as to why he stopped from 1971 to 1974. A lot of people think maybe he was in a hospital, in a mental institution. Some people think he was away in the military. Some people think he was in prison, but for whatever reason, there was an interesting pause in the letters. And then after 1974, that's the last confirmed Zodiac letter and the last confirmed Zodiac activity. But there's also some different victims, you know, along the way, some possible victims that could have been victims of his. And I could tell you a little bit more about those, too, if you want to hear about them.
Let's go back real quick. You said that they had an incorrect description sent out so that when the police were driving down the street, there was a chance they could have stopped and questioned who was likely involved in that crime, but they didn't because they had an incorrect description. Do you know what was responsible for that? Did they ever track down why it was sent out wrong?
Just a mistake in the broadcast of who they were looking for. I don't know the exact details of how that happened. I just know they corrected it pretty quickly. Now, the Zodiac later on wrote a letter stating, you know, the cops pulled a goof. They asked me if I had seen anybody. They stopped me and asked me if I had seen anybody suspicious. And he said he saw a man with a gun run into the Presidio nearby, which was a military base. And in reality, you know, the police say, stand by their story, they never stopped him at all because they weren't looking for him. They were looking for a black male. So, you know, the Zodiac sometimes lied in his letters and maybe just wanted to make the police look bad. But he says that the police stopped him and asked him questions. The police deny that that ever happened. And so we really don't know the truth. It really depends on if you believe Zodiac or you believe the San Francisco Police Department. But that is where he made his biggest slip up, you know, of being witnessed and having the infamous, you know, sketch made of him from a close distance.
Yeah, I know that given the type of letters that were sent, it's completely plausible that he made up the story of being stopped because it would make them look incompetent in some way. Mm-hmm. And the letters at least seem to point out there's a running score of how the police are failing in this case.
Yeah, he definitely got off on that, making them look bad. And I think that my gut feeling is that's what happened. I think he lied about it, but who knows? Maybe the San Francisco Police Department didn't want to look bad. Maybe the Zodiac was actually telling the truth in this instance. I don't think we'll ever know, but it's an interesting piece of the case for sure.
There's a big threat made before the Zodiac seems to drop out of sight.
Yeah, he had threatened to blow up, you know, stuff, blow up a school bus. He threatened to shoot out the tires of a school bus, and then when the kids came scrambling on the bus, he would shoot them. And obviously this put the city, you know, not just San Francisco, but the entire Bay Area, you know, they were making plans on what to do if a, you know, bus got shot out, you know, bus tires got shot out, and he was really shooting kids, what to do. So they had actually instructions. They supposedly had unmarked cars near buses. They had ununiformed police officers riding in buses, supposedly. So they took it actually pretty serious. He actually wrote a letter to them saying if they believe that he would really do that, then they deserve to have holes in their head. So he never carried out any of those major threats of attacking school kids or anything like that or blowing up anything. He never blew up anything. But it was just more of his way of getting his name in the paper, which is something he craved, and seeing his letters published. So that's where he really focused on. And a lot of people, you know, he was a serial killer, obviously. But, you know, more than that, he was an original when it came to, you know, getting attention. Think of Son of Sam in 1977. He started writing letters, capitalizing on it, knowing the papers would print it. And guys like that, that probably never got much attention in their everyday life, they got attention when they saw their names and their letters and stuff in the papers. So I think it was pretty much a case of something similar to that.
Yeah, it's curious because most serial killers, or at least all the ones that I'm aware of, have an MO, a modus operandi. And what's interesting about the Zodiac in this case is it seems like he's targeting couples, and then he kills the cab driver, and then just going off of – and those are the accepted kills. And then going from there makes threats in these letters that almost seem to veer off of the original MO as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Is this someone who's dreaming big of becoming sort of a supervillain?
You know, I think he was, and we've actually, when I say we as a team on the internet, you know, everybody that's focused on this case and dedicated to this case have found instances of comic books, stuff he used in comic books being written in his letters, things that he had learned from watching movies or reading books he wrote in letters, like The Most Dangerous Game. You know, he used a lot of material from that. That's a story about a guy that lived on an island, and when people would get shipwrecked on this island, he would hunt them for sport. He used terms from that. He was a big Gilbert and Sullivan buff. Gilbert and Sullivan wrote a lot of operettas and stuff like that. So I think he probably lived in some kind of fantasy world where he was pulling from a lot of TVs or books or something like that. And he used that in his letters to the press.
Does this make it difficult to nail down who this person could be in terms of having some kind of a profile on him if he's continually changing the game?
Well, that's part of it, is he's given so much to work with. I mean, they have great views of what he looked like. They have good descriptions of him. They have his handwriting, several samples of his handwriting, which if you Google it and look on the net, you'll see just tons of his handwriting. So he did what he could to get caught, but they just were never able to get a, you know, bead on a good suspect, good enough to arrest. And I think he probably fed on being this arch, you know, supervillain that outsmarted the police. I think that boosted his ego. From a profiling standpoint, some of the stuff he wrote was almost juvenile, the way he wrote things, the smart attitude. Some of it came across as juvenile, maybe indicating a younger person. But then some of the stuff like the Gilbert and Sullivan stuff, the operetta interest and stuff like that, some of that, you know, indicated an older perpetrator. So the age on suspect is always switched back and forth between a younger person, and then there's been suspects that are up in their 40s, and you know, any age group went with him. You know, he could have been somebody in their 20s, it could have been somebody in their 40s. That's the accepted age range of who they were looking for, which obviously that's a big age range. You know, we're not locked in on a 18 to 19 year old guy or a 40 to 50 year old guy. We're talking a 20 something year range, so that doesn't help with eliminating suspects.
When you have this huge soup of suspects out there, it's sort of difficult to be able to narrow them down based on really any information because he's all over the place.
Absolutely.
And of course, some would say that that makes him the most dangerous killer of all.
Mm-hmm. And it was hard for the police. The police had some suspects, but there weren't many good ones, and their best one, you know, probably was Arthur Lee Allen, who was identified years later. But he was ruled out through DNA, handwriting, and fingerprints. So he was pretty much ruled out every way that somebody could be ruled out, although he was their most popular suspect. And he's a guy that Robert Graysmith, that wrote the book Zodiac, that was his suspect. But there's a lot of other suspects in the case, you know, and over 2,000 suspects were investigated and ruled out by police.
But there's a very good chance, without delving too deeply at this point, but there's a good chance that perhaps the best suspect hasn't even been identified yet.
And I'd agree with that, sure.
I'm going to do the sponsor thing real quick because I know once we get rolling on this, it's going to be hard to stop. This episode, again, is sponsored by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook and a free 30-day trial if you're a listener of this program. All you need to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/Generation Y. That's GenerationWhy. And you can pick a free audiobook from over 180,000 titles. One I would recommend is Helter Skelter. That's the very famous book on the Manson murders by Vincent Bugliosi. And I think if you're into true crime, this is a must read. Probably in the top five. If you're just starting out your collection, you need to get this. Again, audiblepodcast.com/Generation Y. GenerationWhy. Okay, so did you want to start talking about suspects or did you want to talk about the key pieces of evidence? Because when I was thinking about this case, I was thinking it might be good to kind of have a refresher on the key pieces of evidence. As you alluded to, they've used DNA, they've used fingerprints, and they've also used the handwriting to help them when they're going through the suspects to determine whether they're worth keeping or tossing.
Sure, I can go over that. The best piece of evidence is when he killed Paul Stein. When he was wiping down the cab, he actually leaned in on the top of the cab, and he left a fingerprint in blood on the cab, which is important because, like I said, the police got there very quickly. So he had literally just walked around the corner when the first police officer arrived. I mean, we're talking within seconds of missing him. And he was the first one on the scene, so that bloody print is most likely from the Zodiac. And they have that print done in blood. And that's the print that's primarily been used to rule out a lot of people. They also, after the Lake Berryessa attack, he called the police from a phone booth. And that's one other thing I didn't touch on earlier, but he actually taunted the police with phone calls after the attacks too. But he called the police from a phone booth after the Lake Berryessa attack. And they actually traced the call, and they actually had people run around looking to see where this phone might be off the hook at. They found it off the hook because when he walked away, he left it dangling. And they identified which phone booth he had called. It was near a car wash in Napa. And they had the print guy come in and do check out the prints on the phone. And they found a very good fresh print. I think it was a palm print that was so fresh that it had to be artificially dried to be taken. So they do have a palm print from that. That's Napa police that have that. And then they've also subsequently got latents and palm prints, possibly off some of the letters too. So they have some different print evidence to work with. And they also have some DNA, possible DNA, assuming there's no contamination from some of the letters too, where he licked the stamps or licked the envelopes or whatever. There's possible DNA there as well. So they do have some stuff to work with, you know, to identify him if he ever can be identified. So it's not totally a lost case as far as the evidence goes with that.
Yeah, it's very curious. So they have these, as you say, that one print, especially left in blood, that's about as definitive as you can get because it was left at the actual crime scene. The police were able to get there very quickly. In fact, as has been said, it's a very good chance they've actually passed up the suspect getting there. So do you know if there's any cooperation between any departments to compare palm prints that were taken, if they know if they're both left-hand palm prints or right-hand or anything like that to kind of compare and collect evidence?
Well, that's the thing. With this case, it's a little bit frustrating. Back in 1969, when these attacks were happening, first off, the police agencies didn't really work together. They were all sort of doing their own thing and not really pulling everything because these attacks happened in Vallejo, Napa, San Francisco. You're talking about multiple jurisdictions that these attacks happened in. So they weren't really pulling or sharing their evidence. There's no way to really know if they were checking each other's suspects or maybe they were both checking the same suspects and didn't even know it. That's the frustrating part. At some point, the Department of Justice actually took over a lot of the Zodiac stuff. And supposedly, from what I understand, they were supposed to, you know, make a clearinghouse for all of it so that they weren't all doing extra work and checking the same people. They were going to have a clearinghouse and share information. And so that was supposed to help all the investigators. I've actually talked to a couple investigators in more recent years and asked them a couple questions point blank about their evidence. And if their evidence matches anybody else's evidence, and I haven't gotten a flat no or yes. I've always gotten like a beat around the bush type of thing, which I found weird. They didn't say whether there was a match or there wasn't a match. They almost just sloughed off the question, which has been a little bit puzzling for me. So I really don't know. It's a shame. We really don't know what they have that each other knows about or if any of the stuff links together other than writing. There's, you know, each jurisdiction got letters that were undoubtedly written by the same guy, according to the state writing expert. So that's one thing that links all the crimes.
So to go from here, we've kind of gone over the evidence that they can use when they're going through suspects. And you already touched on the most famous suspect, because obviously it's Grace Smith's favorite suspect, Arthur Lee Allen. There was another suspect, though, that was almost as well known as Allen, and in at least as it relates to this case.
Well, there's actually several suspects over the years. You know, there's been Larry Kane. There's been a number of different Rick Marshall. You know, there's different names that if you Google Zodiac Killer and suspects, you'll just see a list of people popping up, pictures and everything else. Or you can go to my site, ZodiacKillerSite.com, and we touch on all the well-known ones. And the good thing is we touch on the people you haven't heard of before. And one thing I should probably before I even tell you some of the names of suspects, is touch on a couple possibilities, clues to who Zodiac was. There's a 1966 murder in Riverside, California, which is, you know, about 6 hours south of where the Zodiac was killing. And in 1966, a girl named Sherry Jo Bates was murdered outside of the RCC, the Riverside College Library. Somebody disabled her car, and when she came out, the battery was dead, and they came along offering to help her. And they actually – she walked with them apparently into a dark alley, and it's then that they stabbed her several times, and she put up a struggle, but she wasn't able to fend them off, and she was murdered. What happened was 30 days later, after the murder, somebody sent a confession letter, and it's what they called it, a confession letter. It was a typed letter detailing what they did, why they did it, you know, pretty much the whole backstory. And interestingly enough, this letter later on would link up to some clues that the Zodiac letters had in them. Well, 6 months after her murder, some handwritten letters were mailed in the case, and they went to the police, the newspaper, and Sherry's own father, actually. And these basically were handwritten letters saying that she had to die, and there, you know, there will be more. So some threatening tone letters, and these are all down in Riverside. This is a couple years before the Zodiac case in San Francisco. Well, flash forward to the Zodiac case in 1970, the state writing expert is looking at all these letters and stuff, and one of the letters comes to Paul Avery. Paul Avery was a San Francisco Chronicle reporter. He was doing a lot of the Zodiac articles, and he got a threatening letter, a Halloween card actually, from the Zodiac. And it was basically a thinly veiled threat against him. And that story with the threat against him went public, and it went through all over California. Well, a guy named Phil Sins, Mr. Phil Sins down in Southern California, he read about the threat on Paul Avery's life by the Zodiac. And it's weird because in 1969, news doesn't travel like it does nowadays. They may have heard some stuff about it, but they didn't have access to a lot of the stuff. But Phil Sins, once he read these articles about the Zodiac in San Francisco, said, this sounds almost like the Sherry Jo Bates letters down here in Riverside from a few years ago. And he contacted Paul Avery and said, listen, I think this girl Sherry Jo Bates could be a Zodiac victim because the letters in her case are very much like the Zodiac letters. So Paul Avery actually went down to Riverside, talked to the police down there, and sure enough, they've got letters, they've got a number of different things as evidence in her case. And one interesting thing they also had was they had found in the RCC library itself, in the Riverside College Library, they had found a desktop with a poem scrawled on it, written in pen, etched in the desk. And it was a morbid poem. It was about spilling blood and just a real dark, morbid poem. And a janitor found it and didn't know if it was connected to her murder, but decided to turn it over to police just in case. Well, this material was all linked through handwriting as coming from the Zodiac. So lo and behold, these letters, according to state document examiners, these letters and the desktop poem were linked in 1966-67 Riverside to the 1968 through 1969 Zodiac murders in San Francisco. And what that means is if these guys are right, these documents examiners are right, whoever Zodiac was in Riverside 1966 to 1967 and then up in the Bay Area in time for the Zodiac murders. And if that's correct, then that eliminates a lot of suspects and that shrinks down the pool. And that leads to a possible suspect, one that's been gaining a lot of steam lately, especially on my site. There's a lot of people that really like this guy as a suspect, was a guy named Ross Sullivan. And Ross Sullivan worked in the RCC library. And it turns out that his brother was engaged to Sherry's one of Sherry's best friends. So he also knew her. And this guy's name, over the years, he's been investigated before by a guy named Dave Peterson, who was a big Vallejo Times Zodiac writer. He wrote a lot of articles about Zodiac for them. And he somehow got Ross Sullivan's name early on. And I don't know whatever happened with it, but he asked Dave Toski, who was with San Francisco Police Department, who was the main guy hunting Zodiac, to look into Ross Sullivan. We don't know whatever happened with that, if he ever did, if he ever found anything. But Ross Sullivan sort of slipped through the cracks. And recently, I'm going to say with 2 years ago now, I was going through a lot of just names from files and saying, hey, let me just rule this guy out one way or another. So I had seen Ross Sullivan's name before, but I never really followed through with it. And this time I took his name and I did some digging and I found out, yeah, he definitely died in the Bay Area. And then I actually – we were able to find a picture of him. And when I found the picture of him, it was amazing. If you look at the infamous sketch of the Zodiac that was passed out, it looks as if Ross Sullivan posed for the picture. It's that close a resemblance. One thing the police officer said was he had a very distinct widow's peak hairline. Ross Sullivan has this distinct widow's peak hairline. You know, they said the Zodiac was heavy to stocky. Ross Sullivan was heavy and stocky. So, you know, here we have a guy that was in that library. We know it for a fact. He knew Sherry Jo Bates, the Riverside victim down there. And then all of a sudden we know he went transferred up into the Bay Area. So seeing a guy that looks just like the sketch that was in that library is pretty amazing, because to this date, there's never been another suspect who's been proven to be in that library besides Ross Sullivan. Out of all the great suspects there have been in the Zodiac case, nobody's ever been linked inside that library, which is where that writing came from, which is a key piece of evidence suggesting who Zodiac was.
So the trick would be to tie the murder of Bates to the other Zodiac killings.
Exactly. So her case is linked through writing, but not through any evidence that we know of. There was some evidence. We know that there were greasy prints left on her car from where her killer disabled it. She had DNA under her fingers, which we assume are from her killer. Now, one theory that the Riverside police seem to think of is that she wasn't killed by the Zodiac. And a lot of people think Zodiac didn't kill her, but he wrote letters in her case. You know, I'm on the fence either way. That could go either way for me. I have no doubt that he wrote letters in Riverside, which means he lived there or worked there in 1966 to 67. Whether he killed her or not, I don't know. But the Riverside police have a suspect that they've liked for 40, almost 50 years now, that they refused to let up on, despite DNA under her fingers not matching their suspect. But they seem to be, and I think, you know, Zodiac investigators seem to think that maybe she wasn't actually killed by the Zodiac, but the Zodiac wrote letters in her case. And that's where I'm at. I believe 100% that the Zodiac wrote letters in her case and wrote that desktop poem, and that's a positive link to that town of Riverside and in particular the library. So if you find any suspects from that library that can be placed up in the San Francisco Bay Area, that's pretty powerful. And especially when they look identical to the sketch. And if you go on my site, ZodiacKillerSite.com, you'll find pictures of Ross Sullivan, and there's no doubt that he's the closest likeness there's ever been to that sketch. It's you can see it. There's no way around it. So that's pretty powerful stuff. He was a schizophrenic. That's what we've been able to determined he was a paranoid schizophrenic who was institutionalized at times. And that's pretty interesting. But we, you know, due to privacy laws and stuff like that, we can't find out too much about it. We know he was in Santa Cruz, which is, you know, not super far from Vallejo, but we need a link in Vallejo or San Francisco or Napa for him. And that's what I'm hoping. Maybe one of your listeners out there in the Bay Area or Santa Cruz knew Ross Sullivan back in the late 60s or early 70s. interestingly enough, it's alleged that his own brother, who's now deceased, thought that he was the Zodiac. And unfortunately, we can't ask him. We don't know the details surrounding that. But allegedly, his own brother thought he was the Zodiac. And that's something we've always been trying to dig up more information on, but we haven't been able to. So we're definitely looking for tips and any information maybe that one of your listeners might have that may have known him in the Bay Area.
So it's quite clear that at your site, ZodiacKillerSite.com, that there's research, current research going on. When, if ever, do you feel confident in trying to pass information along to the authorities?
Well, I've been lucky. I've talked to authorities in a couple different jurisdictions, and for the most part, most of them have been receptive enough to hear you out. Some of them, they hear Zodiac and they're like, "Oh my God, this case will never die," because a lot of these guys are over, you know, they're under budget, they're over budget, they're shorthanded, they've got fresh cases to work of murder victims from now. So getting involved in the case is old, and they think, you know, it brings out the kooks, and sometimes it does, but it's sort of something they don't necessarily want to get into, and I can understand it to a point, but at the same time, there's some kids that were murdered back in the 60s that deserve to have, you know, justice for their families, and that's my reason for keeping the case alive and keeping it out there, because I'd love this, you know if my daughter, I've got a 4-year-old daughter, if she grew up and she was killed by some maniac, I'd want to know that there's people out there that would be looking for her killer. So that's what keeps me going with the case, and that's what I, you know, I hope that one day we can determine who did the crime, no matter who the suspect turns out to be.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles, and immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Okay, well, keeping along the lines of suspects who look like the sketch, there's one other suspect who, in my opinion, does look like the sketch. Mm-hmm. Aside from Sullivan, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The other one was actually written about quite recently in a book titled The Most Dangerous Animal of All.
And that's by Gary Stewart. And without doing a full book report on it, Gary Stewart was a guy that was adopted as a baby in New Orleans, or out in that area in Louisiana, I want to say. And I guess he did some digging and found out some interesting stuff about his birth parents. His birth parents was a young girl, a teenage girl, and his father was a guy named Earl Van Best, who was in his late 20s, 30 years old, something like that. And they had run away from California, eloped, gone on some kind of spree, and, you know, he's an adult man with a young girl as his bride, and that's how they conceived Gary Stewart. So Gary Stewart went digging and found out a lot of stuff about his parents. And if you read the book, I actually have the audio version because I hate reading books. I like to actually drive and listen to them because I actually can pay a little bit more attention to that way. But and Gary Stewart narrates this book in the audio version, he's got this whole story playing out of how they met and they got down to New Orleans and then they were forced to come back and then they went again. And it's an interesting story, no doubt. And I actually thought, I remember saying to myself as the story's going, this is an interesting story. Well, halfway through the book, just sort of out of nowhere, he just sort of jumps into his dad's The Zodiac. It does like a quick 180, because it starts off as a book that seems like, hey, this is an interesting story about this kid's, you know, this guy's life growing up, finding out who his parents were. The father got a little bit of notoriety, or infamy is probably the right word, since he basically kidnapped a young girl and went off with her and got her pregnant. But in the Bay Area, he had made the newspapers, you know, for this and had been arrested and stuff. But he just, in the book, it just out of left field, basically just throws his dad's name. And instead of saying the Zodiac walked up the car and started shooting, he essentially says, Earl Van Best walked up to the car and started shooting. And then he goes on to make claims, as you know, his dad knew Anton LaVey, who was the Church of Satan leader. I think he said he knew one of the suspects, Rick Marshall. So he starts making a bunch of different claims, which, okay, he's making claims, let me hear him out. But I never saw any evidence that, you know, some of these claims could be true. The first thing that I have to point out is, in every case that Zodiac was witnessed, he was described as being everywhere from stocky to heavy to overweight. Officer Falk, who was the cop that saw him up close, said he was barrel-chested. The Zodiac was barrel-chested. If you look at a picture of Earl Van Best, he's the opposite of barrel-chested. I don't even know what word it would be. Concave? Would that be the opposite of barrel-chested?
That would be it, I believe.
He is petite, I guess, is the only word I could say. He's probably 160 pounds soaking wet. And he just did not match in any way, shape, or form the various descriptions of what Zodiac was mentioned to be. And as far as that generic, he looked like the Zodiac, a lot of people did. Back in those days, if you saw a guy with glasses, he had that look. If he wasn't a hippie, he had a short haircut, glasses, he almost looked like the Zodiac. But the key difference would be, again, Officer Falk mentioned a very distinct widow's peak hairline. And if you look at Earl Van Best, he's got more of a male pattern baldness, a thinning hair. It's not a widow's peak hairline, as mentioned by Officer Falk. By comparison, looking at Ross Sullivan, you can look at both of them together side by side and then look at the sketch, and you'll see that while one guy looks a little like the sketch, one guy looks as if the sketch was drawn based on him. So that's the difference when you're looking at them and saying he looks a little bit like that guy. But besides that, it was just his overall build, his height, his weight, everything was just not what people said the Zodiac was, the people that witnessed the Zodiac. And so I had my doubts as far as this guy doesn't match anything of the description. But what really got me to think that there's something off was, you know, one of the researchers, Mike Rodelli, he's also from New Jersey. He was actually able to get his hands on writing, supposedly, that is claimed in Gary Stewart's book to be linked to Zodiac. He says, this is my dad's writing, and it was linked to Zodiac. And he hired a writing expert, I use that term loosely, a writing expert to match it up. And sure enough, the writing expert says, okay, the writing you gave me matches the Zodiac. And he had given him a marriage application certificate, or some kind of marriage form that Earl Van Best had supposedly filled out. And this writing expert linked it to a Zodiac letter and said, this is case solved. You solved the case. The only issue was when Mike Rodelli got his hands on this paper, it turns out that the paper he supplied that was supposedly his dad's writing, it wasn't his dad's. It was the reverend that performed the ceremony. So this guy identified a reverend that performed the ceremony that didn't even live in the San Francisco area where the murders happened. He identified his writing as being that of the Zodiacs. So that's where the first major flaw came. And from there, it was just sort of a landslide of, you know, things not adding up, things just being, you know, hodgepodge thrown together, wild accusations, wild claims, and none of it really substantiated. You know, he could say anything he wants in the book. He talks about his dad's name, you know, fitting the cipher. I'm not a cipher expert. You know, codes and ciphers are not my strong suit, but we have guys on my site that's what they do. And they pointed out several flaws of trying to fit his name into that cipher. So there's a lot of that really made me think this guy's either flat out lying, I don't know, or he really believes it and he's just not right. And again, it's I don't know the guy, so I'm not going to make a judgment on which is true. But in the end result, I believe, and just about every other person that has a Zodiac related site or discusses a Zodiac case, they believe he's incorrect too. Again, I don't know what his motive is, but if you read the Ratter, it's ratter.com. They just actually put out an article today on their site about Stewart's book. And it's pretty much – I think it's called Everybody Thinks Your Father Was Not the Zodiac. I think that's what it's called. And that's basically gives you an idea of how much people doubt his claim. And that the cherry on the sundae was when his own biological mother – emailed me and said, listen, I saw your site talking about this case. I'm his biological mother. And she essentially laid out how so much of the book is fiction that some of the claims he makes are just completely untrue. So that was pretty damning to have the person who he's writing about, because he was writing about his mother and father through most of the book, and have the mother come forward and say this stuff really just didn't happen. That puts more doubt on it. So when I received that email, that was the cherry on the sundae for me, that I knew, hey, we're wasting time here. And unfortunately, you know, the average person that's out there interested in unsolved mysteries, they have a passing vocabulary when it comes to the Zodiac case, limited information. And they hear something like this, or they see it on CNN where he's making the rounds on CNN claiming that his father was Zodiac. And all of a sudden they're like, oh, I can't believe the Zodiac case is solved. It's unfortunate because while it's bringing attention to the case and maybe somebody will come forward with some real information, it's also doing a disservice because it's putting fake information out there and making people think the case is solved when it's really anything but. He's accused the San Francisco Police Department of covering up the fact that his father was the Zodiac. I mean, because he wasn't met with positive results from them or positive input from them. So he's basically accused them of cover up. So, again, I pretty much have brushed the book off. It's just another one. And unfortunately, he's probably the third or fourth person that's come forward over the years claiming that his father was Zodiac. There was a woman named Deborah Perez that came forward and held a press conference in San Francisco that claimed her father was Zodiac. There was a guy named Dennis Kaufman who claimed his stepfather, Jack Terrence, was Zodiac. He had a site dedicated to it. There's been multiple people that have come forward claiming to know, you know, who he was and that he was their father. Unfortunately, this guy is just the most recent But he's getting a little bit more attention because of the fact his book's been published by a mainstream publishing company, and his 15 minutes of fame isn't running out. He's still making a lot of radio show appearances, TV show appearances. And again, I don't know how long it's going to last, but I have a feeling if I'm talking to 2 years from now, we'll be talking about the same thing that the next person's come out and claimed their dad is Zodiac. So that's where we are with the book pretty much as far as how believable it is.
When he's on programs, most of them will not have researched this. They won't know anything other than, oh, he's solved the mystery. Let's have him on. So he's free to talk without being challenged. And that's what happens with the reader. The average reader is going to be sitting there reading. They won't check any of this information out. So, his claims can go unchecked, unverified. And then at the end of the day, these people can go out and say, oh, did you know that they solved this crime? It's the Zodiac is Earl Van Best Jr.
Exactly. That's 100. You're 100% right on. That's exactly how it was. Because if they had some kind of round table, somebody to react to his claims, it'd be a little bit more interesting because you could see, well, wait a minute, this guy just said this, but this guy's countering it with this. And unfortunately, you don't have any of that. Just like you said, he says what he wants, he pushes his agenda, and there's nobody there to question it. Because you're right, these people haven't research the case as much as some of us have on the internet. They don't know a lot about the case, and they just, hey, he solved it. Let's have him on our show. And that's unfortunate, like I said, because it does put a lot of misinformation out there. The only positive that might come from it is keeping the case alive in the public eye. We're talking about a case that's almost 50 years old, so to get any kind of information or possible clues or maybe somebody that comes forward with information, from that standpoint, it's good. I just hate to see the disinformation part of it going out to the public.
Right. Steve Hodell was another recent one claiming his father, George Hodell, was the Zodiac, as well as, well, you could randomly choose a bunch of other serial killers, and he's claimed his father was responsible for those as well.
The Black Dahlia. I'm not going to say anything negative about him. His book's not out there really getting the attention, whatchamacallit is. So and he's well known in the Zodiac community. Again, I don't know Gary Stewart. I've never met him. I don't know what his motives are. I don't know if he really believes, that his dad is Zodiac, or if he just, said, hey, maybe I can make a buck on this. I don't know. I'm not going to speak for him. I'd like to see the truth in the other side of the coin come out, and before you read the book, because the casual person is going to read that book and say, wow, that sounds pretty interesting. I think this guy may have solved something. Well, if you come to my site, ZodiacKillerSite.com, or you go to Tom Voigt's site, ZodiacKiller.com, or go to any of the Zodiac Killer sites on the net, you'll see there's people that have spent years researching this case that can tell you just why his book is inaccurate, just why his father wasn't the Zodiac. And unfortunately, the people don't get to see that end of it. They're getting to see what's the 5 or 10 minute interviews doing on TV. That's what they get to see. So it's a little bit unfortunate.
Right. So we've talked about some books that we find to be, almost disingenuous. Could you speak a bit on Graysmith's books? Because, frankly, this is the book that got me into reading true crime, was the original Zodiac book. And, it sparked that curiosity about, wow, how could such a person exist? How could they do these different crimes and start taunting the police? And just the escalation of it, at least in the threat level. What do you think of Graysmith's books?
I think, and I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, I actually like his books. There's a lot of people right now that are probably, when they hear this, they're going to be like cringing. Oh, he likes his book. Because he had some inaccuracies in his books. We're talking about a guy that was a cartoonist for a living, and he got so fascinated with the case, he decided to go out and write a book about it. So he had some inaccuracies. Some people claim he had some stuff that he outright made up for the book. I think, personally, a lot of it may have been mistakes, since he wasn't a writer by profession. I myself have pointed out some glaring mistakes that he makes in the book on my site. But again, I'm willing to overlook some of his stuff only because if it wasn't for his book, there wouldn't be any of these websites on the net, is basically what it boils down to. That's what introduced, you know, me and a lot of other people to it, was this big book that was written about the case. And despite some of the inaccuracies in the book, I think it's a pretty well-researched book. I know he was there to do a lot of man hours to go looking for reports. He put out copies of the letters that were never saw before. So I think he definitely added something to this case. If not anything else, then you just get it out there to everybody. And the funny thing is, if you read through the book, especially if you watch the movie, I would definitely recommend that your listeners go out and rent Zodiac starring Jake Gyllenhaal and Mark Ruffalo. And Robert Downey Jr. Watch that movie, because it's a great movie. It's directed by David Fincher. But it's based on the book. It follows the book pretty closely. And it lets you see how people become obsessed with the case, and which is what me and Tom Voigt and other people, I'm sure, that have Zodiac websites. It's a case that when you get reeled into it, it sucks you in. And if you watch the movie with those guys in it, you'll see how Jake Gyllenhaal, you'll see how his character, Gray Smith, how he gets enveloped with the case and how he gets sucked in and can't get out. I sometimes feel that way myself, because you might want to take a break, but then you're afraid you're going to miss something and you can't take a break. That's pretty much about the book. The book or the movie are two things that you should always, if you're going to investigate this case, read that book. And again, the first half of the book is primarily about the different suspects, the police reports, the victims. Towards the end of the book, he's focusing on his suspect, again, Arthur Lee Allen, who's the most well-known Zodiac suspect of anybody. But again, he's been ruled out just about every possible way. Then he wrote a follow-up book, Zodiac Unmasked, and that's where he actually named Arthur Lee Allen and went into full detail about Arthur Lee Allen in particular, and where he focuses, you know, solely on Arthur Lee Allen being Zodiac. But those are two good books, in my opinion. I like the books. And there's a couple other ones out there. Mike Keller wrote a book about Zodiac, which is more of an intellectual book about him. But there's a lot of, you know, crazy books out there too. Time 17. There's a couple other ones that, you know, I just don't agree with, and I wouldn't really endorse. But there's so many different theories in this case that there's books from every angle, from every suspect. You know, why this suspect is good, why this one's bad. And then everybody has a theory, and that's what you'll see in a lot of the books that are out there.
I'm sure that makes it difficult to just pick up a book and be excited about reading it if they've already offered up their theory. Is there a book out there that you feel best represents the case, or at least makes a good case for a suspect that you could recommend to people who are listening that say, wow, I'm interested in reading another book, I just don't know where to start?
I really don't. I honestly don't, because I think they are all written with a theory in mind or a suspect in mind. I honestly think the original one by Gray Smith, Zodiac, is the best book out there, period, hands down. Because for the most part, it focuses on the case and just the case and the suspects and the police and everything else. And it doesn't till the very end of the book start focusing on Arthur Lee Allen as a suspect. So the bulk of the book is pretty much just a layout of the case. And it's what you can find on the net now before there was the internet. It was a good layout of the case with pictures of the letters and stuff like that. A really good source of information, even though some of it turned out to be not accurate.
Well, I suppose what you're saying is given all things being equal, this one will probably be of those books that are offering suspects, this will be the most accurate in terms of it doesn't run off on some wild tangents. It actually sticks pretty closely to the case, and perhaps the author errs in choosing a suspect. But, well, you could forgive someone for that. He focused on someone early on, and it was probably difficult for him to let go given his obsession.
Well, in a way, I don't think – if you read the book, I don't think he focused on Arthur Lee Allen early on. I think he
– No, not early on, but he does let you know that that's who he had in mind.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And at the second book is where he really focuses and says, all right, this is my suspect. Here's who he is, and he lays it out. But the first book is pretty – I like – when it comes to this case, I like books that aren't forcing a suspect down your throat. I like a layout of the case, and that book lays out the case the best, and the overall evidence and the letters and stuff like that. So I don't really like to read books about suspects being forced down my throat. And don't get me wrong, I have a few suspects that I really like. You know, my favorite's Ross Sullivan, but I have a few ones that I like that I think could possibly be Zodiac. But I wouldn't try and force a book down anybody's throat about any of them. You know what I mean? So I like books when it comes to this case that aren't focused on a suspect, because I want the person to be able to make up their mind. You know, hey, here's some suspects. Do you like any of these? Not here's the suspect I'm writing about, and here's a whole book on them. That's, you know, just my opinion. It's the way I feel when I'm reading something like that, that I'd rather see a more neutral case, or neutral report about the case in general.
Well, you have an advantage that I'm sure you're willing to share with others, but on your site, you have a forum, and you guys, you can toss out a suspect's name, and then people can actually debate it. They can say, well, you know, that's fine and good, but he was never in that area between these years and these years, or, you know, any number of ways they can chew up a suspect and spit him out. So there's a sort of things are challenged. So in order for a suspect to rise up to a level where you can actually have a real discussion on them, they have to make it through that, you know, that vicious review process.
You're right. It's like a sort of like a vetting process, but that's what I like to see. I like to actually see a bunch of smart people, and there's some really smart people on my site and on other Zodiac sites that know the case and know details. And if you say something, you know, that's inaccurate, they're not afraid to call you out on it and say it's bullshit. You know, I don't know if I say that on the radio. I don't know. But
no, you can say it's okay. Fine.
But they'll call you out on it, and as it should be. You know, if you're going to come on and make a claim, you got to be prepared to, you know, face the music if you're wrong or you're proven wrong. And that's frustrating too, because some people, if you prove to them 100% that their suspect isn't the Zodiac, like he was in another country at the time, they'll still say, well, it's got to be him. And they'll just continue on this tangent, and you'll never get them to go off that course, which is sad, because a lot of them are really smart and they have a lot to bring to the case. But they're so locked in on their suspect, they're so invested in their suspect being the Zodiac, that they almost can't look objectively at, you know, everybody else as a suspect. But that's something I try and do. Like I said, I have a few favorite suspects, but if it was proven to me tomorrow that somebody else was Zodiac and it was case closed, I'd be all for it. You know, whether it was a suspect I liked or not, I'd want to see the case solved. But I want to try and do it objectively. And again, I'm not going to tell somebody who to like as a suspect. They can like whoever they want. I mean, we've got suspects in this case that are millionaires. We've got suspects in this case that are writers, all kinds of suspects in this case. So there's plenty of them to choose. And, you know, maybe the Zodiac's somebody that's not even listed on one of these sites. Maybe it's just somebody that slipped through the cracks and is out there laughing, listening to your radio show right now.
That's what I like about your site, is it feels like there's an active process going on, unlike some of the other sites, which some of the other sites are well done. They have great images, documents online. Mm-hmm. But, you know, articles are great, but I really like that the active process of seeing people debate stuff. Even if I don't agree with everything, I like seeing that happen, because there's nothing better than a constant review process. The whole idea that this case is stagnated and it's already solved or we can't make progress, those are ideas I don't like.
Yeah.
So
I agree with you 100%. I like fresh eyes. I like, you know, different points of view. I love to be able to sit down with everybody, my say, in a room around a table and look over documents and go through evidence that, you know, we don't have, obviously, and just debate everything and find out what's true, what's not true, you know, what's accurate, what's not accurate. And I think that's the best way of doing something like that is you have it's not one person making the decision. It's a bunch of people that are, you know, looking at things objectively or looking at things through their own angle. We have a resident skeptic. I'm going to give Tahoe a shout out. Tahoe is a moderator on my site. And we always tease her because she's the skeptic. And that's good. I like to have skeptics. You know, I like the people thinking the opposite of what I'm thinking. If I'm saying something I believe to be true and she doesn't believe it true, or she's skeptical that it's true, I want to be called out on it because it makes me dig harder to see, you know, what's accurate, what's not, and if I could be wrong. So we have everybody, every kind of personality on my site, with all kinds of different knowledge that brings something to the case, whether it be their research skills or their code and cipher skills or their we've got a guy named Traveler First, which is really good with like digital imagery and handwriting examination. So everybody brings something. It's like a big team effort. And that's, you know, if I'd like to see every Zodiac site operate that way. Everybody runs their site differently. It's up to them. It's their own site. But I think you get a lot of stuff done and, you know, wade through a lot of, BS and try and figure out to keep yourself on the right path of identifying who the killer is. Because I think that's the end result, is no matter who's right or wrong, if it was announced tomorrow that they solved the case, I don't have anything invested. I'm not going to lose a book deal. I'm not writing a book or anything like that. So it's not like I have a book ready to go. Although by some of the BS books that are out there, I should write a book. But I just want to see the case solved. And I think that's what most people want to see, you know, because I think most people are in it for legitimate reasons. They're fascinated with the case and they want to see the case solved. And, you know, I hope that happens one day.
Right. Has there been any push, I guess, from those on your site to sort of vet each other's favorite suspects? In other words, a real push to maybe focus on one where perhaps each year someone's suspect gets elevated and then there's a real reach to try and find more information, anything to help bolster their case or to take it down?
Well, there's just to give you an idea, Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, he's been mentioned for years as a Zodiac suspect. I personally don't think he was Zodiac, but I respect the people that have spent a lot of time digging it and have come to that conclusion. And they spent hours and they've got tons and tons of documents and they have the luxury of having a convicted murderer to get data from. But then there's other guys where we'll get a run on – all of a sudden we'll get a run on Ross Sullivan. Ross Sullivan's really hot as a suspect right now. But there's been Richard Gajkowski. Tom Voigt's been after him for years. There's a ton of different suspects out there. And every once in a while you'll get a lot of people posting about, you know, hey, what about this? Or I just found this. I just received this in the mail. We had a guy named Fred Minnelli who was a suspect. He's actually a suspect in the Santa Rosa murders, hitchhiker murders. He died back in 1976. We went through extraordinary efforts trying to get handwriting from him, and he wrote lots of letters. We spent, you know, weeks and weeks focused on him and going over these letters that he wrote. We had tons of handwriting of him. And some of the things that he wrote were pretty amazing when compared to the Zodiac. The interesting thing about him, when he died in a car accident in 1976. The next day, an ad ran in the San Francisco Chronicle, and the ad read in part, Zodiac, your partner is in deep real estate. which to some people they interpreted that as your partner, is in 6 feet under. So that the timing of that was always pretty interesting. And Gray Smith actually mentioned Minnelli in his book that he knew Arthur Lee Allen. I think he somehow wanted to allude to the fact that they may have been a team, but he never really expanded on that. But we'll just get, insurgence of information for certain suspects at certain points. And it'll just go weeks in a row where we're just talking about one suspect and getting lots of info. And then we'll, it'll slow down a little bit and somebody else will come forward with information about another suspect. So, it comes and goes with different suspects as far as information goes like that.
So the research is very organic is what you're saying.
Yeah. And again, we're lucky with some suspects. We have tons of – we don't have to wonder what their writing looked like. We have a guy like Fred Minnelli who we've got dozens and dozens and dozens of pages of handwritten letters from. And we can look at his writing and we can say, hey, this looks just like the Zodiac. Or he used these same words. He used the word satirical. Zodiac used the word satirical. I mean, interesting things like that. Then we have guys like Ross Sullivan. We have one Social Security application that he filled out and that's it. And we're begging, somebody to come forward and say, hey, I knew this guy, and give us more clues. And, a guy like Ted Kaczynski, Freedom of Information Act, you can get all kinds of stuff about him because he's a convicted felon, in jail for murder. So every suspect's a little different as to far as what you can find, finding photos of them, things of that nature.
So where do you see this case going? Do you see it being resolved one day, or is this forever going to be unsolved?
Unfortunately, I think the case is going to go unsolved. I say that mainly because the only things in the police mind, writing isn't going to be enough to link anybody. The police, to solve the case, want DNA or print evidence that matches their crime scene. Nothing else is going to do it. Or grandpa dies and you clean out his stuff and he's got a letter there, a confession letter with a gun that was used to kill somebody and you turn that in, that could close the case. But, short of a smoking gun or DNA evidence or something like that, I don't think anything else is going to make this case close. My hope is that when it gets to a point where there's no way that Zodiac could still be alive, on the low end right now, he'd be in his 60s. He could be, in his 70s or 80s. There's a good chance he's dead. I hope when it gets to a certain point that they will release and open up all the files on the case, being that there's no possibility the suspect could be alive any longer. But, that could still be 10 years down the road. So, and there's an early case that's a possible Zodiac case we didn't really discuss, but in 1963, there's a young couple named Linda Edwards and Robert Dominguez. They were killed in Santa Barbara and on a beach, and much of the crime scene evidence suggests the crime went down just as it did at Lake Berryessa in 1969 with Zodiac. The female was made to tie up the male using pre-cut lengths of rope. It was very specific, MO that was used that matched closely with Zodiac's later attack. And they were also shot. A couple were shot. And one, clue in the Lake Berryessa case was that there were Wing Walker boot tracks found at the crime scene. And Wing Walker boots were designed for walking on the wings of planes. They were like a military-style boot, and they were sold to a lot of military. And then they also sold secondhand at like thrift stores and surplus stores and stuff like that. But there's a rumor, and this has never been confirmed. I've never heard this from a cop, but there's a rumor that the same Wing Walker tracks were found at the 1963 crime scene in Santa Barbara. So that would be pretty coincidental if that was the case, and that may link Zodiac to another crime down there. But there's a guy that did a documentary that really goes into in depth in that case there, and he actually tried to get he tried to get the material released in that case, saying, "Hey, it's over 50 years old. Can you release this information?" And the Santa Barbara police down there decided not to release anything. So even though their case is 50 years old down there, they chose not to close it, not to release any information to the public. So, you know, at some point, some of these cases could get so old, some of the suspects could get so old that there'd be no harm in releasing information because the person's most likely dead. And I think eventually we could get to that stage where they could say, all right, there's no possible way a suspect could be living. Why don't we just release everything that we have in the case and let it go public? And at least we could all look through the stuff and say, hey, you know, we were right about this. We were wrong about this. This is what they really had, because the police hold stuff back to, you know, for the investigation that they haven't made public. But it would be neat if one day we could see that. But my gut feeling is, again, I don't think it's going to be solved just because too much time's gone by. Witnesses are dead. Suspects are dead. And the longer we go, I just think the case getting solved is less and less likely.
Yeah, I think it's too bad that we can't get that answer to whether the evidence matches across the different jurisdictions, the prints, things like that, because I think that's a good way to figure out. I think it would answer a lot of questions. Now, when they have prints, they can run them across the database, and there's never been a match, correct?
That we know of, no. And again, they used the bloody fingerprint was used to disqualify, you know, 2,000 suspects. Now, there's always a slight chance that was a contamination print of a EMT or somebody that responded to the scene. But as far as I understand, they actually checked people that were at the scene that night to make sure that it wasn't their print. And I don't think any of them – I think they ruled that out as being a possibility. So if they ever found that print and a match to it, they'd likely have their suspect. Now, that being said, I also asked specifically if that print was put into the database. I asked this of an officer, and he never gave me a solid answer on that, which is I found odd. I don't know what harm would come from him saying that the that the print is in a database someplace, but I never got a straight answer on that. So I would hope it's there. I would hope whatever DNA they have has been put into something in the database, but I don't know. I can't even answer that because I've never been able to get a straight answer.
Well, and it could point to the possibility that if there's a Zodiac killer, that it's someone that hasn't been arrested before and had their prints processed.
Yeah, it's definitely possible. They somehow managed to stay out of trouble and never had their prints entered into a database or something. That could definitely be the case.
Now, well, we do know there have been killers who were later caught, but operated for quite a while under the radar.
Oh, yeah. And that's one thing that a lot of profilers in this case thought, was that this guy wouldn't stop on his own. He'd probably stop because he died or went to jail or whatever. But most people, I think, felt he wouldn't stop and would – he was such a bragger and needed to see the attention that was paid to him, that he fed off that. And that's what it came for him. It became not killing people, but more about the publicity of his letters. So that's why his killings were basically spree killings. The confirmed killings go from December 68 to October 69. And then after that, it's all letter writing. So, I don't think he would stop on his own. My personal thing, I think he probably died. I've even gone as far as to think maybe he moved and was doing the same thing someplace else and just not calling himself Zodiac. And I actually went across the country looking for cases with letters that were very similar in language and tone and wanting to be printed in the papers. And I actually found a few different cases throughout the country where there were letters like that. But I've never had enough to really link it to him and say, hey, this person here in Pennsylvania could be the Zodiac. I mean, I've had some suspicions that there's some similarity there, but nothing solid. So, you know, for all we know, he died in California. Or who knows? Maybe he's one of your listeners. He's out there wondering what we know about him, and he's listening to you right now.
Well, okay, let's just do a what if. Let's say he never left California, and he did want the attention. Where would you put what year would you have him dying then if we go by he needed the attention? So at the very least, if he was alive, he would be writing a letter at least once in a while. Where would you have him dying roughly if he needed the attention and then all of a sudden everything stops?
Well, the last confirmed letter, he was writing letters steadily. Again, he went from 71 to 74. There was a 3-year absence, which is really weird. So a lot of people think he was in a mental hospital, he was in jail, he was away serving in the military, whatever. There's any number of different theories as to why he didn't write, but he didn't write for whatever reason. Then in 1974, he came and wrote a lot of letters again through 1974, and then they just stop in 1974, and there's never been another confirmed Zodiac letter after that. So is it, you know, is it possible he died in 1974? Is it possible he was committed to a mental institution or went to prison in 1974 and was never able to write again? Now, there's been a couple copycat letters that have come out. In 1978, there's a big copycat letter. And there's been other letters that were most likely copycats or forgeries and stuff that have come out. But the last confirmed letter from him was 1974. So I think personally something happened in 1974 that made him not be able to write anymore. What it was, I can't say. But I personally don't think he would stop. Or maybe he decided he moved someplace else and maybe he would write the same kind of letters and just not call himself Zodiac. But again, there's no way to really know.
Has this been a part of your vetting process?
Yeah. I mean, if I find out a suspect died in 1973 and the Zodiac was still writing letters in 1974, well, that pretty much rules him out for me. I can eliminate him immediately. You know, if I ever could find out that somebody's in another country or another state, during a Zodiac crime or something, well, that too pretty much, you know, rules it out. Now, the most interesting thing to me is there's been 2,000 suspects that the police have looked at. You know, there's probably 100 on my site. And I have, you know, unredacted police reports with hundreds more in them. Not hundreds more, but maybe 100 more suspects. So there's a lot of suspects in the case that we have access to. But one clue that boils down, and this is just my personal belief, they placed the Zodiac in Riverside in 1966 to 1967 when the Bates case letters came and that desktop poem was found. So for me, I look at it as, okay, if any of these suspects weren't in Riverside in 1966 to 1967, we can rule them out. For me, that would rule out a lot of people because I wholeheartedly believe that the letters in that case in Riverside in 66 to 67, I believe they were written by the Zodiac. So for me, that shrinks the pool a lot. Now I could start focusing on people that were in Riverside, which for me personally comes back to one suspect, Ross Sullivan, who was in that library, who looked just like the sketch. So for me, I if I had to bet my house on who the Zodiac was, I'd say it's Ross Sullivan. But I'm missing that one little piece that lets me, in my mind, say this case is solved. So, you know, that's what we're hoping for is tips and information to come forward and say, hey, I knew him and I have some information for you, things like that. And trust me, I like to rule people out too. So if I ever got information that ruled somebody out and I could prove that they were in jail or in a mental hospital or something when a crime was committed – in my mind, that would rule them out. So I'm just as much about ruling somebody out as I am ruling them in. Because for me, it doesn't matter who's the Zodiac turns out to be. I just want to see the case solved. So whoever it turns out to be, that's a win for the victims.
I guess I would say that you most likely don't believe there was a team. This was a single individual.
I don't think there was a team. I think that would be hard to keep a secret that long and not somebody spill the beans. I've always said that if there was a team, you know, one of the suspects, Fred Minnelli, was part of it, because the choice of words he used, the terminology, some of his writing habits that he used, and he was a junior college teacher in Santa Rosa, California, and he's the one mentioned in Gray Smith's book as knowing Arthur Lee Allen. He wrote a lot of weird things that just coincidentally maybe matched Zodiac's writings. The subject matter, the terms. Zodiac wrote a letter that mentioned that he was finding something. It's escaping me right now. But just different things that they wrote were very common. He mentioned the word satirical. You know, Zodiac wrote, it's a satirical comedy. He was talking about The Exorcist. Well, Fred Minnelli used the word satirical. You know, the Zodiac used over frequently used the word shall. That's not a common word. Most Americans don't use the word shall. Like, I shall do this, I shall do that. Most Americans don't say that. It's just, but a lot of people that are literary, you know, types that write poetry or, you know, write stuff in general, they do write, use that word shall. And sure enough, Fred Minnelli, when we went through his letters, he was using the word shall left and right. So, you know, they were on the same wavelength. So it's interesting things like that that, you know, make suspects interesting in one way or another, and that's the kind of stuff I look for when I'm looking through stuff and say, you know, this stuff gets pointed out and it's hard to dismiss, and you have to wonder, you know, is this a coincidence or is there something to it?
Okay, well, is there anything else you want to say to the listeners before we close the show?
We're looking for strong-minded people that are interested in unsolved cases. Maybe have a background in investigating them, whether it's amateur or professional. If you like a good mystery, we invite you to come to the site and check it out, and, you know, see what the case is really about, see what the facts are before you make a decision one way or another about the case. Because, again, it's America's version of Jack the Ripper. It's a really big case, and there's a lot of people that are fascinated in true crime and unsolved mysteries. So ZodiacKillerSite.com is a spot where you can come and, you know, read the facts, be part of the conversation, and just learn about the case. And we're always looking for new members. And, you know, if you have questions, there's contact forms on there where you can, you know, submit information, submit tips, or if you just have questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
I want to thank you for coming on, Mike. It's great to speak with you again, especially to have you lay out the case as you see it and as you've researched it. We've had so many requests. Some of the people have enjoyed our past Zodiac shows, but other people have said, can we get a more canonical view on this? And so having you on is great. One of the most interesting things for me was to get your take on the books that exist. So for anyone out there who's a voracious reader like I am, it's great to have you on to give your point of view on, you know, what to expect with those. And I think you did that without going too hard on them.
Okay, well, and I appreciate you having me on, Aaron.
Just a reminder, our listeners qualify for a free audiobook and 30-day trial from audible.com. Just visit audiblepodcast.com/Generation Y.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.